at info@wpfw.org.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcasts, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
The extreme right-wing agenda to reclaim the United States government. It's called Project 2025. This morning on What's at Stake, a deep dive. And good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Former President Donald Trump is backpedaling at meteoric speed away from the right-wing Heritage Foundation's proposal, Project 2025. It's a detailed blueprint of how conservatives plan to deconstruct the U.S. government as we know it and reshape it into a Christian nationalist autocracy with Donald Trump at the head. Over 400 conservative scholars, former elected officials, economists, veterans, and policy experts have contributed to the proposal. It addresses virtually every aspect of government, including cutting Medicare and Medicaid funding, to prosecuting anyone sending or receiving contraceptives, to prosecuting for anti-white racism, and abolishing the Department of Education, and much, much, much more. The goal stated in the 922-page book is, quote, to assemble an army of aligned, vetted, trained, and prepared conservatives to go to work on day one to deconstruct the administrative state, end quote. The plan is a detailed blueprint on how right-wing conservatives are positioning to have Donald Trump, if reelected, use Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution to implement their plan. It's chilling. And this morning on What's at Stake, we're going to take a deep dive into Project 2025. Joining me in our virtual studio this morning is Daryl Jones, Esquire, board chair and co-leader of the Transformative Justice Coalition, where he's the creator and chair of the Perrin J. Mitchell Dinner and Salute. He's an advisor to the Maryland Caucus of African American Leaders. Attorney Jones is a career civil and criminal defense litigator. Served as assistant state's attorney in Anne Arundel County, received his BA from the University of Maryland, College Park, and his Juris Doctorate from Baltimore University. Good morning, Attorney Jones, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Vern. It's always great to be with you.
And I know you just got off a flight at 12 midnight, so I sincerely appreciate you making the sacrifice to join us on the air this morning. Now, Attorney Jones is a longtime advocate for civil rights and a career criminal defense litigator. What in Project 2025 concerns you the most?
Wow. How about its entire existence? All of the stuff that is in Project 2025 is scary. And, you know, let me give it, take it from the criminal perspective. From the criminal perspective, here's what Project 2025 would do. It would weaponize the Department of Justice. And when I say weaponize the Department of Justice, I mean weaponize it. Let's consider it this way. What Project 2025 proposes in the criminal realm is to have the federal prosecutors go into the local jurisdictions to monitor what's happening in each individual locale. It would break it into divisions all across the country to go in and to investigate and watch the prosecutors as they're prosecuting cases. So what does that mean practically? What that means practically is this. If you're in, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, any of those states, any of the, 21 states that have abortion bans, and their prosecutors that are in some of the rural areas, the urban areas of those states that say, I'm not going to prosecute based on the fact that, I don't think the ban should be in place. What Project 2025 would do for those prosecutors is it would risk arresting the prosecutor. Risk arresting the prosecutor for not enforcing the law. It would risk going after the doctor and prosecuting the doctor for not standing up to the law that's in those conservative states. So, practically what that would mean is this, right? If you're in Alabama, Alabama is one of the states that has no exception for abortion, whether it's incest or rape, it doesn't make a difference. If you're in Montgomery, right, one of the urban areas there, and the prosecutor there says, I'm not going to enforce this. I think this is wrong. No, I'm not going to do it. The federal prosecutors would come in, and at that point, they would be able to go ahead and prosecute that prosecutor, prosecute the doctor, prosecute everyone in that chain. That's scary. Additionally, what 2025 would do is that, many of these states now are moving forward with the legalization of marijuana, right? Mm. It's not legal on the federal side. So it would have the opportunity to then go and start prosecuting those cases and trying to dismantle that. All of the very conservative jurisdictions that have put in place, some of these extreme state legislative measures, what Project 2025 proposes to do is to have the federal prosecutors there to say, you're going to follow these conservative principles and these conservative laws, whether you like it or not.
And that's what you mean by weaponizing the Department of Justice in these instances.
Absolutely.
Sergio Munoz is an attorney and an expert in legal policy. He has worked on progressive law and policy for the American Civil Liberties Union, the Federal Rights Project, and the National Council of La Raza. He has a bachelor's degree from Brown University and a law degree from the University of Michigan Law School. He's currently the vice president of research and policy at Media Matters, a nonprofit media watchdog. Good morning, Attorney Munoz, and welcome to What's at Stake.
Good morning.
So a Navigator research poll conducted June 20th through the 24th, about a month ago, found that 77% of voters in their survey, and they surveyed about 1,000 voters, had heard, quote, little or nothing about Project 2025. Mm-hmm. Yet we see where former President Trump can't distance himself far enough, fast enough from it. What does your research show about voters' opinion of Project 2025, and how do you explain Trump's actions?
Well, I think the word's getting out. As was discussed, I think some of the things that are proposed right now in Project 2025 are extremely concerning for those of us who actually believe in a pluralistic, multiracial democracy. It is really trying to strike exactly at the heart and foundation of what has made this country great in the modern civil rights era and all of the progressive changes and advances that we've had in the past few decades. Project 2025, as was mentioned, is a blueprint, but it's a blueprint based on a very, very old playbook. The head organization behind it is something called the Heritage Foundation, which is a very old and established right-wing think tank. They've periodically put out plans like this. They call it Mandate for Leadership. It's basically a policy brief of well-worn right-wing conservative policy proposals, which get, depending on the administration, depending on the powers in charge, gets a varying degree of acceptance and backing. This time around, they decided to recruit 100 different conservative organizations, ranging from the traditional, very old, established ones to some of the more extremist ones. And they put together a new version of it. And they called it Project 2025 in anticipation of the second Trump administration. this was going on for a while because it is something that they've done periodically. And you would notice at the beginning, the Trump administration really didn't say anything about it. They didn't try to distance themselves, the Trump campaign, excuse me, did not try to distance themselves from it. And there was a good reason for that. The good reason is that a lot of the proposals are things that not only the right-wing establishment has been trying to put into place successfully or not so successfully for decades, but the Trump administration itself. The overlap between this version of the Mandate for Leadership, which is called Project 2025, and the Trump campaign and the first Trump administration is vast. The vast majority of people that actually contributed to this version, this Project 2025, this plan, have connections to both the Trump administration and the Trump campaign. The overlap between the people in charge of actually drafting and crafting this blueprint, similarly so. And not just the Trump campaign, the Republican Party itself, one of the head leaders of this version's 2020 of Mandate for Leadership 2025 is a former top administration official for Trump and was also the policy director for the RNC involved in drafting this year's platform, which Trump himself approved. You don't have to take our word for it either, even though we can prove the receipts and show just how deep these connections go. The president of Heritage just last week was bragging about the overlap between Trump's proposed policy goals for the upcoming administration and that within 2025. He's done this repeatedly, talking about how many connections they have, how much overlap they have. This is not the first time that they've actually had the proposals readily received by the Trump administration. They bragged that during the first year of the Trump administration, 64% of the proposals in that year's Mandate for Leadership were accepted. So it's just not plausible for them to deny it. And I think folks are starting to wake up to that. I think the point that you were mentioning might show indeed that it's just starting to burgeon in terms of witness. But the Trump administration is well aware that it's not that because of the negative connotations around it, they're trying to run as quickly as possible because they can see public awareness is spiking.
We also had the pleasure of being joined by my esteemed colleague, Dr. Julianne Malveaux. She hosts her own show here on WPFW on Monday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. She's an economist, an author, a former educator, a political and social commentator, and she's guaranteed to deliver the raw, unadulterated truth. Dr. Malveaux received her BA and her master's from Boston College and her PhD from MIT. Good morning, Dr. Malveaux. Thank you for joining us.
Morning. Good to be with you, Verna, and good to be with Daryl and Sergio as well.
So, Dr. Malveaux, signs at the Republican National Convention say, make America wealthy again. Question, did Trump make America wealthy his first term, or did he inherit a decent economy?
Well, he A, inherited a decent economy, and B, he made the wealthy wealthier, but he didn't do very much for anybody else. When you look at, what happened under him, poor people didn't get better off. He had lower inflation because he inherited lower inflation and because he didn't have COVID. President Biden inherited COVID. COVID clogged supply chains, which caused basically spiking prices, and they're coming down. A year and a half ago, we were looking at 9% inflation. Now we're looking at 3.5. So there has been progress, but no one wants to count the impact that COVID had on the economy. And of course, the former president likes to blame President Biden on everything. When we look at, the Project 2025 is literally one of the most scariest documents I've ever looked at. For any number of reasons, including the fact that now the former president intends to run away from it. But as Sergio said very well, you can run, but you can't hide. Carson, his former HUD secretary and his current running buddy, has a chapter in there. Steve Miller has a chapter in there. You could go down the list. There are at least 30 former Trump, either close associates or cabinet members or appointees, we have chapters in there. So you didn't have anything to do with it? Well, no, because you won't write anything. You can't write. but you have people who are basically doing your dirty work, as has always been the case with this president.
And also, while he's insisting he knows nothing about Project 2025, the proposal includes plans for addressing immigration issues that are virtually identical to his plans. He has promised to, quote, carry out the largest deportation operation in American history, end quote. And he said during the presidential debate in Atlanta, we have to get these people out. They're going to destroy our country. And he plans to deport millions of immigrants illegal immigrants who he say have entered illegally. Project 2025 outlines a meticulous strategy to deport and prevent immigrants from entering the U.S. And if Trump wins the election, and if he were to implement the proposal in 2025, Dr. Julian, what impact would that have on the economy? Would that make America wealthy again, deporting all those immigrants?
Will it make America broke again? The fact is that we currently have a labor shortage. The reason why immigrants are important is because they're doing work that Americans don't want to do. And if they all disappeared, who would do that work? You know, we're looking at, I mean, he talks about black jobs, which is just such a misnomer. And it was so wonderful that at the NAACP, President Biden said, what is a black job? Vice president, president. But what they're really doing when they use that term, they're taking black jobs, is they're trying to stir up some black-brown tension. And it's just inaccurate and inappropriate. What we know is that if even 2 million immigrants were deported tomorrow, that would cause, would spike the cost of labor. We would end up having to pay more for Americans' jobs, not Americans, whoever they call themselves. See, I'm confused. I am really confused. Many immigrant people have been here for decades. Many of them, and he just lumps everybody in. So he had the young man, Mr. Morin, last evening, whose sister was raped and killed, and he wants to extrapolate that into all immigrants. But that's just not the fact. When we look at actually so-called Americans, people who are born in the United States are more likely to commit crimes than immigrants are. Mm-hmm. Undocumented, you know, we are more likely to commit crimes. We, not me.
And I understand what you're saying. And I think their polls that show that immigrants are not committing crimes at any higher rate than American residents.
It's a lower rate. They're committing crimes less frequently. The issue is, of course, most undocumented immigrant people, they don't want no mess. They're hiding. They're not trying to engage with the police or anybody else. They want to go do their little off-the-books job, and understand that off-the-books jobs subsidize all kinds of things and basically make it more difficult for other workers to get fair wages if you have people working off the books. So these employers who hire undocumented people and pay them less than the minimum wage are benefiting. So the fact that the former president rants and raves about immigration belies the fact that one of his golf clubs was hiring undocumented people and paying them less than the minimum wage off the books. I think it was one of his golf clubs. Somebody did an expose. But most predatory capitalists will hire undocumented people rather than unionized workers, because they say 10, 12 bucks an hour.
And that has to be factored into this platform that the former president is promoting. Well, you know, I think it's important to note that, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but most of these proposals would have to actually pass the House and the Senate. So unless Republicans take control of both houses of Congress, these proposals in Project 2025 would have a hard time passing.
No, Berna, many of them would. But there's also the administrative state, and the administrative state is going to be eroded if this thing, if this man is reelected. Already, okay. Can I call him Uncle Thomas? Associate Justice Clarence Thomas has said he wants to get rid of OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. They're looking at many of the administrative agencies, which basically the Chevron case said that the administrative agencies, and Daryl is an attorney, he can, either one of y'all attorneys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. But basically, the Chevron case said that when there was a conflict, the administrative agency would basically adjudicate the conflict. What they would like to have is judges adjudicate the conflict. But if judges don't have enough sense to, with all due respect to judges, to adjudicate certain things. For example, if you're doing a environmental thing, what judges have degrees or knowledge about environmental anything? So you would send that to the EPA. Well, now they're saying, no, don't send it to the EPA, send it to the judge. And the president could let that happen. There are a number of things there that there's presidential jurisdiction about. So it depends on the president. And again, Darryl Jones, I see you looking. So you tell me if I'm wrong, because I might be.
Let me just say that you're listening to What's at Stake. I'm Vern Avery Brown. My guests this morning are Dr. Julian Malveaux, Sergio Manus, and Darryl Jones, both attorneys. So let me say this. Trump is quoted as saying late last year that if reelected, he's going to be a dictator on day one only. And critics of Project 2025 believe this will turn our country from a democracy into an autocracy. Do either of you think that's a fair criticism from democracy to autocracy, or is that a little bit over the top? Anybody?
Well, you know, I think it's a fair criticism. I mean, I think that, you know, a couple of things. Let me take a step back. With the Chevron case, that the court actually ends up doing the making the determination, you know, and not the legislative body, and that's the biggest concern, is that the court, as Dr. Malveaux was laying out, would be in the process of deciding all these administrative issues without being authorities in those areas. We actually just left the National Bar Association, and that's where that's the bags that you see here. Just left the National Bar Association and their conference, and that's one of the topics that we did on the panel, was dealing with Chevron. But, you know, clearly, I think regarding the autocracy piece and being a dictator on day one, what you see laid out in the Project 2025, or as former President Trump likes to call it, Agenda 47, which is just shorthand for Project 2025, what you see laid out, though, there are the steps that are taken to create some type of autocracy, right? Because what they want to do is they want to bring into the various administrative positions of federal government people that are loyal to Project 2025, loyal to Agenda 47, to the president. What they want to do, I'll roll back real quickly to the criminal side of it. What they want to do with the FBI and refocusing the FBI on where it focuses on cases, what they want to do with the prosecutors. They want to have every prosecutor, every federal prosecutor, not loyal to the law being presented in the case, but loyal to the president, right? That's the autocracy. And that's what they want to create throughout the entire system, are people that are loyal to the president. So, you know, I think it's a very fair criticism to speak of it as an autocracy rather than a democracy that is being desired.
Okay, Attorney Darryl Jones. So this proposal actually seeks to, as you say, well, you didn't say it, but to reclassify federal employees. And what is meant by reclassifying tens of thousands of federal civil service workers as political appointees in order to replace them with Trump loyalties? Is that new? I mean, each administration that comes in is allowed X amount of political appointees, and those individuals are expected to leave when their president is no longer in office. And the DMV, the District of Maryland, Virginia, has a considerable number of people who work for the federal government. In fact, 25% of the people who live in Washington, D.C. alone are federal government employees. And of course, that percentage increases when you factor in Maryland and Virginia. How would this proposal to declassify federal civil service workers impact those workers, Darryl, Attorney Jones?
Oh, my goodness.
To give this some context, I know Attorney Jones is more than capable of talking about it from a legal perspective, but I would like to also think about it from a labor market perspective. We're talking about being 38,000 and 50,000 workers. A disproportionate number of them are Black people and Black women. So if you basically look at your Black people get better treatment as employees in federal government than they do in the private sector. We make more money with the federal sector than the private sector. Get better benefits and better regulated benefits in the federal sector than private sector. So you're talking about between 38,000 and 50,000 workers who potentially would lose their jobs. I mean, that's and when you put the percentage on, when you put the percentage on, think about just who you know and who would lose their job. How many people you know who work for the feds? But Daryl, I mean, I think there's a legal argument too that I'm not making. I just want to put the numbers in perspective before you gave us a legal conversation.
No, Dr. Malvo, you know, you're right on point, because, you know, one of the things we've got to look at is who's going to be most impacted by this. And I think that's what Dr. Malvo is laying out and lays out very clearly, that, you know, the African-American employee is like disparately impacted by these decisions. So what does it mean if you declassify someone and to reclassify it as a political appointee? Well, a political appointee serves at the pleasure of the elected official. Right. So if you want to impose a loyalty test, right, I don't care how long you've been there, I'm imposing a loyalty test to see, are you loyal to the president? You do it as a political appointee, because you don't have protections as the political appointee for whatever reason or no reason. You know, I don't like the way you prosecuted a case. I don't like the way you're handling the policy. This is the policy that I want to implement. I don't care what the law says. Where does that come from? Oh, that immunity case that we were just talking about. I don't care what the law says. I'm the president. I can do whatever I want to do. I can't be prosecuted for anything. So the political.
So he can actually declassify large thousands of employees. He can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
Oh, I was just going to jump in, because I think it also goes to how absurd is that they're trying to draw a distinction between Project 2025 and their current plans, because this actual idea of reclassifying employees, they tried at the very end of the first Trump administration. It was an executive order that they called Schedule F, and it was pushed through by this gentleman, Russ Vought, who was the director of the OMB and is currently one of the head people in Project 2025 and the policy director at the RNC. His idea was to, as it was just explained previously, was to reclassify the civil servants, the ones that are not the political appointees, the folks that don't transition with every administration, the folks, to your point, who work these jobs sometimes for their entire lives and live in the tri-state area. In D.C., Virginia, and Maryland, reclassify them so they could be fired at will, which right now they can't because of civil servant protections. But the idea was turn them into at-will employees and then purge them completely, which gets back to the point we were talking about an autocracy. This entire idea, and it was already discussed quite well, about just making the administrative state something that is completely subservient to Trump, is possible because all of Project 2025 basically is removing all the remaining guardrails and norms that hold the executive branch in check, the executive branch which controls all these administrative agencies. So now that those guardrails and norms have slowly been eroded, we have a perfect storm right now. You have a president who's proposing and his advisors who are proposing to take this latitude, which they've achieved over decades of stacking the courts and running more and more autocratic politicians. They're going to take this latitude and, again, turn it into a personal fiefdom for their own right-wing extremist ideas. And they can do this. They've laid the groundwork to do this. And if they do things like Schedule 5, that's pretty much Schedule F. That's pretty much the last remaining straw that they need. A lot of people speculate that the reason they weren't able to do more damage during the first administration was that there was too many adults in the room, that were either political appointees or too many adults in the room that actually worked at the agencies and that were actually experts. And not only experts, but that were patriotic Americans and were not really in the mood to see someone just come in and wipe out decades and decades of what makes American democracy an American democracy. But they're proposing just to get rid of that and put in a bunch of lackeys, a bunch of amateurs who have one qualification and one qualification only, and that's to cater to his autocratic, nihilistic, selfish instincts.
So basically, employees would have to be looking over their shoulder to see who might want to report them as not being loyal to the president, in addition to doing their jobs. Daryl, did you want to make a comment? I thought.
And two real quick things. It's not just about being loyal to the president, looking over your shoulder. It's about being sufficiently loyal to the president and looking over your shoulder. And, you know, there's some listeners I know, Verna, that are out there and you're saying, you know what? These three people, they've got to be making this stuff up. There's no way this could possibly happen or be happening. And I just wanted to remind listeners that we currently have a Supreme Court that is made up of folks that are the example of what we're talking about now. It is a minority majority of the Supreme Court. That is that the majority of the Supreme Court was put on by presidents that lost the popular vote. So it's not that the Supreme Court represents the vast majority of the interests of the American values. And so the Supreme Court is one of those examples of what happens when we have this type of presidency that's put in place and the results of it. That's how we end up with, after 50 years, Roe v. Wade being overturned with the Dobbs decision. Let's also remember this, and I'll stop on the court on this one, although, you know, I love going after the court. Former President Trump appointed hundreds of unqualified federal judges, unqualified not by my standards, but by the American Bar Association standards. And one of those judges just threw out a case in Florida that involves President Trump, Judge Cannon. So let's be certain that, you know, when we talk about that loyalty test, we talk about what it means and what it's all about. That, I suggest, is an example of that.
And we see these things manifesting as we speak. You're listening to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. That was Attorney Daryl Jones. Also joining me is Attorney Sergio Manus and my trusted and beloved colleague, Dr. Julianne Malveaux. We'll be back in a moment.
Hello, WPFW. Summertime is here. Words Beats in Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness, featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, The Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, live art installations, hands-on workshop tent, and health and wellness pavilion. Free to the entire community. July 27th on the National Mall. DMV Made Festival. Get more information and RSVP today. WBLINC.org/DMVMade.
Welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Vern Avery Brown. So now if Project 2025 were somehow implemented, the classrooms America's children are taught in would be altered into the image of the Christian right. Dr. Malveaux is an educator and a former president of Bennett College in Greensboro, North Carolina. The proposal would totally eliminate the Department of Education. Your thoughts about that and other proposals with regard to education in Project 2025?
There would be a revolutionary change in the way that education is delivered. As you say, it would number one, eliminate the Department of Education. Number two, eliminate funding under Title I, which is funding for schools that have in districts that have less than the poverty line or median, basically schools that have poor children in them, but they would not get monies. Number three, we would eliminate affirmative action, any mention of diversity, equity, and inclusion, curriculum. You see what has happened in Louisiana, where every classroom must exhibit a copy of the Ten Commandments, and teachers must teach the Ten Commandments.
What? Repeat that. That's in the proposal in Project 2025.
They must exhibit a copy of the Ten Commandments in the classroom, and teachers, regardless of whether you're a science teacher or a math teacher, must teach the Ten Commandments. Now, I'm not sure how it's being actualized, but the legislation did pass in Louisiana, and that's the model. That governor says that he wants the Louisiana model to be implemented in every other state. We can look at our vice presidential nominee, the Republican nominee, J.D. Vance, who had introduced legislation about that says it will be illegal to consider race in college admissions or any aspects of college performance, and would create a inspector general to basically adjudicate cases where people like Ed Blum decide. Ed Blum is the rabid human being. I'm editing myself. Went after the Fearless Fund, has gone after affirmative action and many colleges. But in any case, they would actually appoint an inspector general simply to look at those kind of cases. So basically, this has already had a chilling effect on what people are willing to talk about in their classrooms, and a chilling effect on content. They don't want to talk about enslavement. They don't want words like structural racism are not words that can be used. A black principal in Texas was fired because he basically allowed to teach CRT. And first of all, we're not teaching CRT, critical race theory, in K-12. We're teaching it at the law school level primarily, but also perhaps at the undergraduate level. But it would really change education and open up doors for all kinds of, you know, what the whole of Project 2025 all opens doors for us to be placed into a litigative state where people can sue about anything, and many will just modify their behavior because they don't want to be sued. In the educational arena, we've already seen parents go to court about what's in curriculum. We've seen teachers being fired or in some cases not being fired, but just shutting up. We've seen people, you know, we've seen school boards go after people. The whole issue, this is tangential to your question, but also very important. What happens to our transgender youth? I mean, they are a particular target of these people. J.D. Vance has already talked about transgender youth in many of his speeches before being the vice presidential nominee. Now, we should be clear that what these folks are slick, and we need to be slick, too. The former president says he's not Project 2025. He's Agenda 47, but it's the same thing. But we've noticed about him in the past month or so and in their platform. Abortion is not in their platform, but you know it's on their agenda. They basically try to present themselves as far more moderate than they actually are. And that's just not the case. And, but when you call it with the rhetoric we're hearing, the rhetoric is still the same. Ordinary extremist rhetoric that we've been hearing all along.
And a lot of the language is the same too, from whatever this 47 agenda and Project 2025. There's some conversation about anti-white racism not being allowed any longer. And, you know, that
never any anti-white racism. So not being allowed any longer, they're asserting something that does not exist. Something that's ahistorical. If you look at if you look at our history, I mean, they don't want preferences. Well, white people were not enslaved. That's a preference. we go down the list. Let me stop.
So the author of Project 2025, Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts, says this is, quote, the second American Revolution, end quote. And the proposal actually includes a battle plan to regain control of the government. So, given the actions we all witnessed on January 6, 2021, how do you all interpret that? Is that a veiled threat of violence or a figure of speech? Anyone?
Well, what the head of Heritage said, it'll be a peaceful revolution if the left allows it.
A caveat in there.
The left allows it. In other words, if the left does not allow it, i.e. Biden is reelected, then what are they going to do? Another January 6th?
Well, there seem to be plenty of guns out there under their control. The young man that was killed for allegedly assassinating former President Donald Trump, said he got the gun from his father's gun cabinet, which had, I don't know, something like 30 different guns in it, and which sort of clarifies why there's so much anti-gun control legislation coming from the right. So either of you, Daryl or Sergio, your thoughts about the American Revolution quote. Real or, you know?
Daryl, I can speak to it, or you can. What do you prefer?
No, please, go ahead, Sergio.
We did hear that. I think we were the ones that dug that up. I've noticed he has been trying to walk it back a little bit, but to your point, they're just expressing a sentiment they've had for a while. They think a lot of modern American democracy is a mistake, and they've been quite open about this for decades. I mean, they've been saying that the civil rights era and civil rights legislation was a mistake. They were saying that protections for anyone who is not the dominant class is a mistake. They've been saying that voting rights that expand the access to the ballot to everybody who's qualified is a mistake. They've been quite open about what they want, and it is a revolution. And that, I think, is why he was so free to just use those words. You know, he used a flourish, which he's now trying to walk back in light of the events of the weekend. But it's something that they say all the time, to be honest. And the fact that they've created this specter of this violent and pernicious left, when in reality they're just projecting what they themselves have been doing in terms of trying to, just the most recent example, January 6th was a coup attempt. It was an insurrection attempt. And it is not actually the first one that the right wing has tried. If you go back in history, as far back as the Reconstruction, often a lot of the advances that we have for our multiracial democracy are met with armed resistance, violent resistance. So I think this is one way that they're just trying to, again, gaslight the public when it is themselves that are the radicals and trying to overthrow all the advances that we had. And I would speak to some of the things that Dr. Malveaux has been mentioning, which are really frightening, because we are at the moment when they've laid the groundwork to do all sorts of radical things, take abortion rights, reproductive rights, because of the courts that were stacked, as Daryl mentioned, and the fact that they got rid of Roe v. Wade, they're now free to really rewrite the civil liberties and rights for women and families across the country. Project 2025 literally says we're going to remove every single mention of abortion from anything in American government. And they have the power to do that because they control the administrative agencies, as was mentioned, the executive branch. They're going to reduce federal funding to any entity that is remotely attached to abortion or reproductive health. Back to affirmative action. Again, an accomplishment which they were able to do through a stacked Supreme Court and right-wing ideologues like Ed Blum, who brought the case. They managed to essentially make race-conscious law and policy unconstitutional. And it's not just in higher education. It's something that they've been using steady by steady to eliminate it across the public sector. And they're using it to start eliminating it through private businesses as well. They're going to make race-conscious law and policy illegal. And Project 2025 builds on that. They might call it DEI in Project 2025, removing all mention of DEI or all woke references to DEI. But they're doing the same trick that they did with critical race theory. What they're really doing is talking about race-conscious law and policy. And a lot of American legislation, because of the civil rights movement, has race-conscious law and policy. And they're trying to strike it completely from everything. And Project 2025 sees the opportunity. They're just going to do it. The Department of Education, getting rid of the Department of Education. That's something that's been proposed at least as long as Ronald Reagan. And now that they have the opportunity to do it, they're going to strike while it's hot. LGBTQ youth, they are focusing on trans youth without a doubt, but they're only using that to get the foot in the door and remove the protections for the rest of the LGBTQ community. Project 2025 literally starts referring to any books that refer to gender identity as pornography, and it should be criminalized. So they're talking about locking up librarians. They're talking about locking up teachers. And this is of the same hand. This is of the same hand in hand, which they're trying to strike all mention of race consciousness from books and libraries and school curriculums, is they're just another step away from criminalizing that as well. They are literally saying this is the moment they can do what they've been trying to do for decades.
It would become an America that we would no longer recognize if that were to happen. And to sort of underscore your point on the abortion issue, they want to prosecute anyone who sends or receives birth control pills or other contraceptives. One might possibly do jail time for having birth control pills or, I guess, an IUD or, I suppose, even a prophylactic. So this is a brand new America that could be manifest if that were to happen. So now, and they were turning the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Department of Commerce, and the Federal Trade Commission, and the FCC all into partisan or political organizations. So you can just imagine what would happen with radio and television coverage if the FCC is, it becomes a partisan organization more so than some might. Yep, I'm gonna leave it at that. And there's a plan to cut funding for Medicare and Medicaid. There's some extreme proposals in this. I want to take a minute and sort of see, was anybody watching the Republican National Convention this week? I mean, I was struck by the fact I saw more Black folks on that stage than in a Baptist church on a Sunday morning. I was like, I mean, how many different Black folks are they going to bring out on the stage? I guess they're trying. Maybe that was diversity night that I was watching. Maybe that's what it was. Anybody else watching? Any thoughts or comments about the RNC?
I don't watch pornography. So basically, I have seen it in the background of my office, and sometimes I flip back and forth. But Law and Order was much more provocative, frankly.
Okay. And Sergio, I know you're a nonprofit organization, so there's only so much you can say.
But look at what they do. Look at what they write. The convention's a media event, and it's a production for TV, so they can push the message that they want at that moment. But that's why Project 2025, they're so scared of. It actually revealed what they're really aiming for, regardless of what they have up on the cameras.
And Laura Bush, former President Trump's daughter-in-law, was quoting Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and referenced Harriet Tubman. Which I thought all of those were extraordinary moments at the RNC, and we'll have to see what happens at the DNC next month when it takes place. Any final thoughts on your parts, Dr. Malvo, and then Daryl Jones, Attorney Daryl Jones, and Attorney Munoz? Any final thoughts on your part?
What I would say in closing is that people need to pay attention to this stuff. I think a lot of people are not paying attention to it. Just Google Project 2025. Just read the summary. And from the summary, you'll get a sense. I mean, it's 920-some pages. I didn't read the whole thing. I read about half of it. And there's some really frightening stuff in there. The part on the labor market starts by saying we're a Judeo-Christian nation, and therefore we believe in work. And then it goes to talk about slashing any kind of government assistance to people who do not work. So Medicaid will be tied to your work. If you don't work, you won't get Medicaid. And they would set up some kind of an agency, which they don't really specify, to make sure that if you got Medicaid, you would work. So the aspects of this thing are very frightening. But first of all, I'm sure, as Daryl said, a lot of people are probably listening to us saying they're exaggerating. This is not true. This can't be happening, but it is. So I would just encourage people to read some of it for yourself, or read some of the summaries of it for yourself, so that you understand what's at stake. By that, I mean, a lot of people say they don't vote. They're not going to vote because they don't want to deal with President Biden because he's old. Well, he's been old. I mean, he just get old last week. So, and we knew he was old when we voted for him in 20. I wrote a piece. I said, would you rather a mumbler or a liar? Come on now. So I've been saying to people, very pragmatic about this. And although President Biden is far from perfect, He's far better than the alternative that's out there right now.
Dr. Julian Malveaux, Daryl Jones, final thoughts on your part.
I certainly would underscore what Dr. Malveaux has said, but you know, I would also encourage people to not have blinders on going through this. And when I say not to have blinders on, what I mean is that, you know, when you start taking a look at Project 2025, if you think about it in the concept of what they in this conservative movement are trying to do is called white Christian nationalism. And if you look at the principles of that and the principles of what they're trying to do in Project 2025 and the Supreme Court, they're all in alignment with one another. There's a consistency that's there that runs across the board. And, you know, I want to close because, you know, we at the Transformative Justice Coalition, we're big voting rights folks. There are parts of 2025 that go against voting rights. That is that we have all these conservative states that have these voting restrictions that are in place with regarding whether or not you can mail out absentee ballots, whether you can tell people, you know, about access to absentee ballots. Project 2025 also addresses that because they would prosecute those electors that send out the information despite what the pushing it out of parameters of what the state may call for in those conservative states. So when we start looking at Project 25 in the voting rights world, we know that there's a lot of stuff that's in there. You know, moving the division that deals with civil rights into criminal parts for the prosecution of civil rights violations and things along that. There's a lot that's in there. So we've got to be certain that we remove the blinders and not thinking that anything bad could happen because the country won't let it happen. Project 2025 is a bad, bad seed, and we've got to be certain that it does not take harvest and grow anywhere in our country.
Attorney Daryl Jones, Attorney Sergio Munoz, your thoughts.
And Daryl and Dr. Malveaux are absolutely right. I think it's very important that everyone Google it, read up on it, ask questions, or you might wake up one day and find yourself in a country very, very different than you thought we all shared.
And I would urge people to get their passports ready, renewed. Also, let's just remind everyone listening to this broadcast that Project 2025 can only begin implementation if former President Donald Trump is reelected. So a lot lies in this election. Re-examine your political affiliation during this election. I think personally that independents and the so-called undivideds, and I say so-called because I think most people have made up their minds about who they're going to vote for, but they will be the ones that will ultimately sway this election one way or the other. So keep that in mind in terms of how you might, if you decide to vote, how you might cast your vote. But that's basically going to do it for this week's edition of What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you all for being my guests this morning on What's at Stake, attorneys Daryl Jones and Sergio Munoz and Dr. Julian Malveaux. And thank you all for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael Nasella. Next week, Denise Young will be your What's at Stake host. And up next, Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. E. Faye Williams. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and in the words of the late, great Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done.
African Diaspora International Film Festival and Africa World Now Project hosts the 17th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, D.C., August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center, featuring fiction and documentary films, receptions, and Q&As. ADIFF D.C. from August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Life Matters. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
Hello, WPFW. Summertime is here. Words Beats and Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. Featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, The Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, live art installations, hands-on workshop tent, and health and wellness pavilion. Free to the entire community. July 27th on the National Mall. DMV Made Festival. Get more information and RSVP today. WBLINC.org/DMV Made.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere welcomes Ladysmith Black Mambazo, Tuesday, July 30th. Nelson Mandela titled them South Africa's cultural ambassadors to the world. Details at birchmere.com.
Hi, this is Miyuki. Thanks to all who contributed to or are thinking about contributing to WPFW's Relocation Fund. Your very generous donations are what make WPFW possible. Your continued support keeps us alive. Special thanks to Joyce and James Kilgore, who made it possible for our 125 Ellington Thank You gift to be available. Detailed information at WPFWFM.org. Thanks to Gloria Turner for feeding our phone volunteers. Thanks to all who work together to help WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
It's attorney Nikichi Taifa, and I am thrilled to host a talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. starting September, as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nikichi Taifa, Wednesdays, 5 p.m. for Human Rights and Justice.
The Institute for Policy Studies, the Wallace Global Fund, and The Nation invite you to their first annual Henry A. Wallace Symposium, Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, on Monday, July 22nd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Speakers include National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols, Soma Arias of People's Action, and IPS Executive Director Tope Falerin. That's Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, Monday, July 22nd, 6:30 to 8 p.m., at the 14th and V Streets Busboys and Poets. More information and how to RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events/counteringamericanfascism. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW presents Democracy Now!'s coverage of the Republican National Convention, Monday, July 15th through Friday, July 19th at 11 a.m. It is your support that makes this possible. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I testify. Sophie's